end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. It didn't happen, lads. We waited an extra half an hour to record and it didn't happen. There you go. We're all expecting, or we weren't expecting a trade really, were we? But there was no drama at all whatsoever. Si, how are you, mate? Disappointed by lack of a trade? I don't know what the answer is.
No, not at all. I'm glad it all passed off without any major events or incidents, because that's just good for all concerned. I think common sense prevailed. We'll talk about more as we go on, but yeah, it's just a sensible decision all around for everyone, I think, from the Dolphins' perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Lee, how are you, mate?
Yeah, doing well.
Doing well. Not disappointed either.
Not disappointed, not surprised. This is exactly as I thought would happen. The same thing we've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks. But good news is, when tomorrow we get to have a story where, don't worry, they've got it in place that they're going to trade for him in the offseason. So let's get out of there now.
All makes sense. All makes sense, mate. Play the long game. Still can't believe he's being paid like $10.5 million to do absolutely nothing with all these like accusations hanging over him. Like, you know, it doesn't seem just in a way, does it?
And you see, like, he's got that $37 million becomes guaranteed, like, in March. So, like, either way, someone's taking that on. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's insanity. But
if I was the Dolphins, I'd wait until after that becomes... Are the Texans going to have to pay at the moment it gets guaranteed? Or can that be transposed to a team that trades for him? I don't know.
That's all part of the negotiations.
It can be moved to a team that trade for him, but you'd have to have that trade in place before it becomes guaranteed, I think. Because when it becomes guaranteed, if you're the one on the contract that's guaranteeing it, then it becomes your problem.
Yeah, do you remember that Brock Osweiler trade where he got a load of guaranteed money and he ended up on the Browns? And it was like, that was it, wasn't it? Maybe
they ended up using the money to buy a pick, didn't they?
Yeah, that was it, yeah. Yeah, so very interesting that nothing happened. The kind of report seemed to emerge from the Dolphins side of things a couple of hours before the trade deadline, saying that, you know, didn't get the legal stuff sorted in time. Interestingly, it seems that Stephen Ross was granted permission to speak to Watson on Monday night, but that didn't lead to anything. Lee, your take on that, is that at all interesting to you, or is that kind of, you know...
Yes, it is interesting to me for maybe a different reason to most people. I never thought it was going to happen, never thought it was happening, never thought every time they said a deal was close, and now it turns out that's not true. As we kept saying, if people say it, it's not true because no one knows a Dolphins business. It's not the way they operate. It just isn't. But I did the one thing I said on this show that I shouldn't do last week. And that was, I went on a post-game show after the after the game on Sunday with Kadeem. And I said there, if the Dolphins want Watson to sort out his legal issues, you'll see how much he really wants to be a Dolphin. Apparently, it isn't that much. He'll waive his no trade clause, but he's not willing to get the legal issues sorted. So, kind of tells you, that tells you all you need to know from me. But that's...
It could be that he believes he's innocent and he doesn't want to show guilt by settling up, but I do take the points, yeah. So,
yep, definitely.
But yeah, be back in the off season then, Si. What do you reckon? Do you reckon that's what it is for now? Are we ready for discussions in February, or are we, is that it put to bed finally?
Well, no, it's never going to go to bed until such time as Watson has been traded to whoever team takes him on in the end. So it's never going to go away. But the interesting takeaway I got from the reports that Ross wanted to or did speak to Watson was that, and the fact that it's out in the public domain says to me that they've thrown Tua under the bus publicly now, even though you've got on the one hand Flores saying Tua is our quarterback, and now you have Watson, you have Ross speaking to Watson or wanting to speak to him allegedly. So whichever way you look at it, they're not all singing from the same hymn sheet now. And if I was Tua, the fact that I know he's handled it with dignity and with class so far, but privately he must be fuming the fact that that sort of conversation that Ross wanted to have is now out in the public domain. So he's effectively been thrown under the bus. And it's very reminiscent of what they did to Tony Sparano when he was head coach and they went after Jim Harbaugh whilst Sparano was still in post. Who knows what Tua's thinking this evening after hearing that publicly. But having said all of that, though, we don't, as Lee said, we don't really know what exactly went on, and we're never going to find out necessarily. And we don't know what the conversations have been like with the front office and the coaches and Tua that have been undertaken privately. So Tua may be happy with the conversations they've had, but that's never going to be made public, is it?
I mean, it's unlikely, but I mean, there's a chance that Ross wanted to speak to Sean Watson to say, look, we ain't interested.
Lee, you are clutching at straws there, my friend.
Well, all I'm saying is, you know, all we know is he requested to talk to Deshaun Watson, and that request was from weeks ago. We just know that it was suddenly granted last night because the Texans have suddenly realized, uh-oh, this isn't happening. Like, when we're on the hook to pay this $10 million this year, and he's not even going to be, you know, with the team. The one thing I'd say from Tua's point of view is I feel for him because he's in a bad situation. This isn't a great way to start anyone's career, but they were also flirting with you on the sidelines at an Alabama game before they ever drafted you. Like, this team has a history of doing this. Stephen Ross has a history of doing this. Like, don't be surprised that they're doing it to you because they did it to the person before you. They did it to the person before that.
Yeah.
Just go on, mate. Go on.
Sorry, Andy. I was just going to elaborate on a point Lee made about Ross potentially calling Watson to suggest that we're not interested in trading for you. I think if that had been the case, it's an awful risk of a massive PR disaster if that was the case, for it to go horribly wrong. So I'm not convinced that would have been the conversation. Why would he have needed to speak to Watson to tell him they weren't interested? Could easily have leaked it to the media. Obviously, they didn't. Or not even bothered speaking to him at all to express that they're not interested. So I'm not sure that that's the reason. Sorry, Andy, go on.
No, I was going to kind of also elaborate and just say that I just think it's the whole thing's just been a bit of a PR nightmare, hasn't it, to be honest? Like, from start to finish, it's you know, it's just been handled so poorly. And you kind of see the way that, you know, it's dead. We see it every week in British football, like, Is this manager our manager going forward, et cetera, et cetera. Just come out with a nice, strong statement. It doesn't always mean that what you say is like God's honest truth, but it's just so easy to offer that backing in a plausible way, which kind of just moves the story on. But the Dolphins haven't really done that, despite the fact that, you know, he's saying that quarterback till the end of the season or something. There's just something about Flores' conviction there, which doesn't just... You know, it's been pretty dubious throughout, and thus you just get the impression that the Dolphins have almost invited this upon themselves for no real benefit. Well, no benefit whatsoever in my eyes. But go on, Lee. Go on.
I've never been sure what exactly people want him to say. So Flores comes out and says, "Two as a quarterback, we're happy with the quarterback situation." And what's read into that is what he really means is he's a quarterback today, but tomorrow we're trading for Watson, so it doesn't matter. And the first time he ever puts an actual time limit on it by saying he's the quarterback for this season, meaning there is actually almost, you know, the first time he ever puts any sort of expiration date on it, we take it as, well, definitely sticking with Tua then. Like, you know, it's... I think no matter what he was going to say, the story was already written that they wanted Watson. And no matter what he said, it was always going to be twisted to be that way. We've also seen reports come out today saying that he's been happy with Tua all along. Funny how those come out now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the whole thing is a mess. And I don't think we'll ever truly know what is actually going on.
From a PR point of view, though, all you've got to do here is, like, every time he gets asked about the Watson rumours, he comes out and he says, not commenting on rumours, which is fine, and that's normally the way that you handle these sort of things, but it's a specific answer, which is, no, we're not interested in Deshaun Watson. These allegations are outstanding against Deshaun Watson. We don't want a player like that to play for the Miami Dolphins. Tua Tagovailoa is our quarterback. You say all three of those lines back to back, and this story goes nowhere until something actually unfolds. In my eyes, that's just me as a kind of guy that works in PR, and I'm not kind of pulling that and saying that I'm right. That's just how I'd approach it. That's what I'd be saying to my spokesperson. This is what you've got to say to kind of confirm that where we are as an organisation. What do you reckon? Is that because I haven't said that, but I mean, I don't feel like I'm being unreasonable by asking for someone to come out and say that.
No, and you're not being unreasonable at all. And like you say, that would have put the story to bed for at least until the off season. Talking of which, come next off season now, we know Tua's going to be in post until at least the off season. It feels as though the fact that the front office seemed to have thrown him under the bus, that we're getting to the point where come the off season, it's either going to be Flo and Greer or Tua. It almost smells as though you're not going to have both next season. Whether that means Flo is going to lose his job and Greer's going to lose his job and the new coach is going to come in and stick with Tua, it remains to be seen, because he might have his own opinions, of course. But whatever happens, the fact that the way this has been handled so poorly seems to me that there is going to be a parting of the ways of sorts between Tua and Blow in the front office, whatever that looks like.
I agree. And Liam, I apologise. I feel like I had a go at you then, but I didn't have a go.
No.
I was just passionate from the heart, mate. But yeah, all good.
But I do think the opposite. I actually think there is a chance that the Dolphins weren't sellers today. They didn't dump anything. They didn't pull the plug. So there is a chance that you put yourself in a situation where you're improving from, like, let's be honest, it could be worse than it is now. It can get worse, because you could have traded Xavier and Howard. You could have got rid of Byron Jones and those big contracts. You could have traded Ogba. You know, you could have got rid of Parker and Fuller as well. And we're looking at a team that is much less talented, regardless of how badly they're playing. They would be far less a talented team. If this team now, without the distraction of the Watson stuff, is able to string some wins together, winning cures everything. Like, you know, we know it happens all over the NFL. As long as you win, no one really cares what you do. You know, and you've only got to see the way Chiefs fans are reacting right now to the way the Chiefs have been playing, you know. And you think all the winning they've done in the last few years isn't enough to keep them happy. Like, you know, start winning the end of the season. I don't know. The outlook could just be very different.
And I just talked about a potential parting of the ways between the quarterback and the front office and the coach. But consider the scenario where Tua's got this massive chip on his shoulder now because of what's happened, and he goes out and he wants to prove everybody he is the man, he is the quarterback of this franchise going forwards, not just this season, but into next and beyond as well. And he does make the team go on a winning streak. Is he almost going to be in a position where he's cutting his nose off to spite his face, because he could ultimately end up saving Flores' job as well? As so, what happens then?
That's it, isn't it? I mean, I agree. It's I mean, my at the moment, I feel like, and we were going to speak about this later, but let's do it now. But I feel like Flores is basically done. I can't, unless Flores brings the record up, and, you know, we win 8-9 games and we kind of come through the back end of the season having, like, done really well. I just feel like Flores is done. I feel like the ownership will want to have seen progress. We haven't shown any progress from last season. Everything's got realistically worse. Obviously, Tua's been okay. We'll talk about the Bills game in a minute, but it just feels like, where does he go to save his job from here? And a lot of people on Twitter, actually, I asked the question earlier, and a lot of people were kind of saying, oh, actually, I think he's here for anyway for next season, no matter how we end the season. But can we realistically think that a 3 or 4 win Miami Dolphins team, you know, the coaching staff with this kind of talent that we are all very excited about, can they keep their job, Lee? I mean, I don't know. I think you're in favour of like keeping Flores, I think, but how do we like justify that just with how poor that everything's been this year?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, because it could easily go either way. I don't think there's a right answer. That's the beauty. If Stephen Ross walked in tomorrow and blew it up, like, you couldn't blame him. You know, if I was the owner of the team, would I have had an itchy trigger finger today to make some moves to try and do something? Most certainly. I'd love to be that in that privileged position. But, you know, I am in favour of letting Flo coach into the start of next year. You know, I would give a player in his third year the benefit of the doubt. I don't think Brian Flores, off the back of 2 Coach of the Year performances, has suddenly forgotten completely how to coach. Has he got stuff wrong? Yes. Do I try and force him to fix it? Yeah, I personally do. But I would say, if you're right and Flores is done already, then kick him out tomorrow. Kick him out today. Because there's no benefit. Let's see if anyone else on this roster can coach without him, if you think he's the sort of bottleneck to actually being successful. Put an interim in there. Let's be honest, what are you going to do? Lose more games? At this stage, you're not really losing. So yeah, I mean, to me, I'm riding it out, but that's just me, and I'm pretty sure I'm in the minority.
Sorry.
We've said on previous shows that there does need to be somebody held accountable for the performances this season, and maybe Flores will get a chance to fight his corner when he has his annual review with Stephen Ross and effectively blame the coaching staff or the coordinators and clean house that way. Because Lee's right, if you're prepared to give a player an extra time to correct his mistakes, the same way that last week we talked about how it was important for Tua to rebound after an interception, can Flores rebound after a poor season? It's just obviously same principle, different scenario, but can you do the same with a coach as you can with a player? And if Flores fights his corner, he may decide to throw Greer under the bus. He may decide to throw the coaching staff under the bus. Equally, Greer may do the same. So it's very difficult to say at the moment which way it's going to go. We just have to sit and wait, don't we? And the results may speak for themselves also. If the team don't win another game, then it's a no-brainer. Of course, they're gonna clean house. But if we've looked at the schedule coming up, and it's quite feasible, given the right circumstances, the Dolphins could win 4 or 5 games on the trot, given the opposition and the fact that they're at home a lot. So it's not insurmountable that he might save his job, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I don't think Flores throws him under the bus. I think he still takes the we're all as responsible as everybody, whether it's Grin not getting him the players he wants, him not hiring the right coach and stuff. Like, I think everything we've seen of Brian Flores, I'm looking for the right word, I'm not really sure. He's mature enough, man enough, he's self-aware enough to admit he's made mistakes. Do you know what I mean? Because I think if you go in there and pretend that it's not you, or that you didn't contribute to it in some way, then you're basically firing yourself because you're completely unaware of what's happened. I do think as well, we know the saying in the NFL is that the head coaches get 2 crack at a head coaching gig, because often they learn from those mistakes and come through it. We know that more often than not, when you fire a coach, you end up with a rookie. You end up with the hot guy. Let's be honest, right? Brian Flores gets sacked today, people are going to want Joe Brady. They're going to want Eric Bieniemy. They're going to want all the same names that were in the cycles before. They're going to want all the hot hands. And how well does that pan out? Do you know how well that pans out? You would have just sacked Flores after taking him as a rookie head coach. You would have sacked Adam Gase after taking him as a rookie head coach. You would have sacked Joe Philbin after taking him as a rookie head coach. Like, stop repeating this. Like, if it happens, I want experience. I wanted experience last time, so I'd want experience. But right now, I want to let you grow through this, go through this growing pain and sort it, because I believe there has been some signs that there is still stuff there to work with.
Yeah. All very interesting, isn't it, really? We're obviously talking about a lot of hypothetical scenarios here, but it just feels to me that, like, it's a conversation that's going to, like, dominate the second half of the season. You're going to start to, you know, if is he the man, is he not the man? Where do we go from here? How do we turn things around next season? Because I think, you, like you said earlier, Si, it might not even be quarterback or head coach. It might be head coach or majority of roster. Like, it's going to take a huge overhaul to kind of convince us that this Dolphins team is competitive again next year if we kind of keep going the way we are. And that's going to take a real change of approach from Flores in terms of paying some big name free agents, as we've spoke about in previous weeks. So, you know, just kind of handing the offense over to somebody with a bit more experience, probably. But then again, you fire an offensive coordinator duo, and that's another, you know, another offensive coaching staff. What's that, 4 years in a row now? And thus, you know, how can anyone succeed within that system? It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, it feels to me that it's really kind of going to intensify and debate, but there's no real easy, you know, fix-all solution. And apart from if you get rid of Flores and replace the whole coaching staff and then get optimistic behind another guy, that's the easy one for me. But Conley, you're coming in.
That's the dreadful circle that we're in right now, is people want to complain that Brian Flores has sacked too many coordinators, but the only answer is to sack the coordinators. And the only answer that isn't that is to sack everybody. So yeah, either way, you end up with new coordinators anyway. So you can't win. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, there's no good answer to that. And I just think it's the sort of conundrum that we're all stuck in. Yeah, it's one of Brian Flores' own making. I really think this team never looked better than when it was under Chad O'Shea in the first year, to be honest.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because if we go out, and we've got 10 games left, I think. If we go out and win seven and above, then you kind of go, then there's no debate to be had, is there, really? We go around and go, this is, you know, it was a bad first half of the season, but this coaching staff can put it together. In reality, we're not going to do that. And the worst situation will be if we win, I don't know, 4 or 5. And then we kind of sat there thinking, so in the back half of the season, we went 500. We split the toss. But we still don't know whether this is the right kind of coaching staff unless we give them more time. And the same thing happens next year. And we just don't go anywhere as a fan base. That is miserable, isn't it? And at least in the last couple of years, all right, we've not got to the playoffs, but there's been a clear upward trajectory the whole time. But now it's just kind of absolutely miserable when you're just sat there thinking, like, what happens next? Do we do this all again and rebuild again and then have another 3-year, 5-year plan, whatever? It's just not optimal, is it?
That's why I'm willing to ride it out. Because I'm trying to break the cycle a different way rather than immediately getting back into the same zone. I just think we end up, you know, you fire everyone and start again. We just go back to the beginning of the Flores era. We can all be excited for year one and 5 wins, and we can all be excited for year two and hopefully more wins. And then we can all be back here 3 years' time and we'll sack another rookie head coach. Like,
I just wondered if you said the Flores era, Lee, or the Flores era.
I don't know what I said. It could have been either.
It could have Freudian slip, that they call it, if it was a Flores error. Because there's
an error for me, for sure.
Yeah, there's been plenty of those this season. I mean, not errors from you, Lee, errors from Flores, I mean.
But there's definitely a way, though, that this team, you say it's unlikely that we win more than 5 or 7 games in the back end of the season. Think of how many games we won in the back end of the season year one. And I don't think it's even a question that this team is as talented as what that carcass of a team was. So I think it's more than feasible that they win a lot of games. Is it likely? Certainly not, because they're certainly not playing well enough. But I do think that if you had any team in the NFL that wasn't Jacksonville right now to play, you've probably got them. So, you know, if you want a chance to kickstart it, you can put the Watson stuff behind you. They we might be running into what I thought the Jacksonville game would be before we ended up playing with no corners. You know, there was a chance there where I thought I saw you and Simon warming up to go in when we got the team news that they weren't playing. You know, I was confident that the Dolphins would win big that day, and I think they would have with the corners, you know, not playing week all the time. I definitely thought, we'll get onto in a minute, that, you know, they look better against obviously a far better Bills team this week than they did against Jacksonville in London.
Yeah, you're completely correct, mate. And let's go on to that now then. Obviously, 26-11 defeat kind of went down the pan in the second half. But first half was very good, wasn't it? We were all kind of sat here thinking, this is what we saw last year. You know, you could see Josh Allen getting more and more frustrated. Couldn't kind of get any time and couldn't find his receivers. Obviously, that can't happen for a full game. Even the best teams are going to, you know, if you're going to keep giving the opposition the ball, three and out, then they're going to, you know, get tired. They're going to find cracks in your arm and get through. So it was an interesting game, I thought. I don't think we played as badly as as many expected, and I don't think the scoreline was as bad as many expected. But because of the hope that the team gave us in the first half, everyone then took the second half really badly, and it just became another like debacle afterwards because we couldn't put any points up on offense. So your thoughts on the game, mate? Any kind of other positives to draw out at all?
Not Jason Taylor, because I want to talk about Jason Taylor's comments before the end of the show, but Mike Gesicki was brought into not brought into the team because he's already in the team, but his snap count was more on a par with what you would expect from arguably your number one receiver. I don't understand why he only got four targets, though, if he's on the field for pretty much all of the snaps. It was nice to see Devontae Parker finally show up and be a focal point for a change. I don't think Tua didn't play great, but it could have been worse. I like the way they orchestrated a few drives in the first half, but obviously that wasn't sustained into the second half. But I think for anyone to expect him to play the way he did against the Falcons and the Jags was living in cloud cuckoo land, because that was never going to happen against the number one defense in the NFL. He just needed to effectively be a game manager on Sunday, and he did that well in the first half. But obviously, they failed to make the necessary adjustments in the second half. They went away from Parker. As I said, Gesicki only got four targets all game, I think. Don't understand that. So there were a few positives to take out from there, and obviously the defense showed up for the best part of three quarters as well. And Lee, you mentioned about Flores potentially calling the plays on defense, and it looked that way for the way he was holding the play card in his hand and calling into his headset. Interestingly, he denied it though in his presser the following day, I think, which I thought was interesting. So it's nice to see the defense finally show up. So there were a few positives to come out of it, I guess.
Lee, your response to that, your response to the play calling stuff, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I would have money on the fact that he was calling plays. I think he's trying to stop it being more of a story than it is. He was certainly far more active, and certainly far more active with that play sheet than he has been in recent weeks. I thought the comment that cements it a little bit for me is Xavier Howard saying we got back to some of the stuff we did last year. We know one of the problems last year was that Brian Flores was taking over play calling too often. I mean, it fits. In the first half, they looked like last year's defense. They forced the Bills into mistakes, whereas the last few weeks, the only way they've made stops is when the other teams have made mistakes. And I thought it was great to see. And it's one of the things that gives me hope and says there's a reason that you can see that there is something here. This is why this isn't a talentless team. This is why, you know, we're not. This is why we're upset to be in this position and not, you know, expecting to be here. I was actually really quite pleased with the way Tua played. I think when you go up against one of the better defenses in the NFL, it was never going to be easy. I thought the 26 points for the Bills kind of flattered them somewhat. Obviously, there's the interception. I know a lot of people wanted to talk about that on social media and in the sort of national media afterwards. on fourth down at the end of the game needing more than one score, I don't care if you throw an interception because you can't go down holding the ball. Yes, when he needed a miracle when he threw it, but it's better than it was turning the ball over in our half of the field no matter what. So the play was dead, and it wasn't a great play call in my opinion, because it didn't play to what we have done well for a number of weeks. And obviously no one was open. So if we were sitting here and you'd seen the replays and you say there's a guy running free, then yeah, that's on Tua. But in this case, I throw it up and hope for a miracle, a deflection, a pass interference, whatever. I'm better with that than you take going down with the ball in your hands. So the interception really didn't bother me. Obviously, the turnovers were frustrating in regards to the turnover with the snap that hit Mike Gesicki, where they didn't seem to be set. You know, they were in prime scoring position. This is how a team that's this talented is losing games, is that they're making ridiculous mistakes at ridiculous times. Because let's be honest, even if they didn't score, it should have been another field goal. And Jason Sanders misses a field goal at the start of the game. That should have been 9-3 at halftime. Yes, that doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like a massive thing, but that would have been a score just before the half. You know, get the ball to start the second half again. Like, let's be honest, the Bills fans are ready to boot that team off at halftime as things were not going well. And even after all that, we still come out of it at halftime at 3-3. And you kind of think to yourself, well, if someone said 3-3 at halftime last week, you'd snap their hand off. So, you know, I think there's still a lot there. I thought there was, we haven't seen those breakdowns of plays so far where you see wide receivers screaming open all over the field and people missing. Not like when we were watching the Brissett breakdowns afterwards. So I haven't watched the All-22 myself yet, but I get the feeling when I watch it, I'm going to feel more that it was bad play calling rather than bad play execution by Tua. I didn't like the one play that we've seen broken down where I think it's 3rd and 10 and all the receivers are breaking their routes off at 3 yards. Like, I don't know what is he supposed to do with that. And I don't, it's easy to say he can check out of these plays. You can't check out of every play that's sent in. It's just not like, otherwise you're not doing your job as a quarterback, because part of that is to execute what's being played based on what other people are seeing. So I don't know. I think it's really difficult, but I actually, you know, came out of the game pretty pleased.
Yeah. Go on, Ty.
You mentioned the questionable play calling. That's nice, Lee. That's a nice segue into what I wanted to talk about with regards to Jason Taylor's comments, where for those that haven't heard about or listened to it, part of the official broadcast team for the Dolphins publicly criticising the play calling on a broadcast at the end of the game. I just wanted to know, guys, what you thought of that. Is he within his rights to publicly criticise the play calling, given they're a broadcast team they're part of the organisation? And why should that get the focus all of a sudden now? Because the play calling has been atrocious all season, hasn't it?
It's got to. You've got to be able to say these things, even if you are technically part of the team, haven't you? So yeah, I completely agreed with the comments. I thought they were very timely as well, and it just needs, like, probably a bit more of that, doesn't it? I mean, like, if it gives it a rattle and we come out on Sunday and start taking a few more shots, especially given the opposition, then, you know, we can go away and say, yeah, more of that, please. Let's do that. I mean, you don't want any kind of broadcast crew who are just kind of sitting there and denying it happens. Otherwise, it's just a bit sad, isn't it, really? Isn't it really, given some of the plays that were coming through?
But maybe why only now is it getting the focus, those sorts of comments? Because the play calling standard hasn't effectively changed all season. It's always been at that poor level. So why only now, if is it getting that focus, do you think? Is it frustration boiling over?
I think it's because if you ask Jason Taylor to take his T-shirt off, he's probably still got a Captain C on his chest. And he thinks he can make a change. He thinks he can get through to somebody by saying it out loud. And I think the reason that it boiled over this week in particular is the defense had played three quarters of a good game. They had played well enough to win the game. Like giving up the score in the end of the third quarter or just into the fourth quarter that put them up two scores, is they're going to give up scores. This is a team a lot of people expect to go to the Super Bowl. So giving up points is not you know, is not a damning indictment of the way that they're playing. Was it? I felt that we got a bit soft at that point. But this is the first game where you could say defense has done its job, because they hadn't done that in a long time. Like, let's be honest, the defense has been bad for a, really, they didn't play great in week one. They got the late turnover, which kind of helped cover things up. But since then, they haven't played well either. But this time, it wasn't an equal share of the offense wasn't scoring and the defense weren't stopping anyone. This time, the defense did their job and the offensive play calling wasn't good enough. I think it was also backed up somewhat by Tua coming out and kind of saying, I can only run what's called because that's my job as a quarterback. I think that was his extremely polite, and you know, we were lucky enough to be in a presser with him. He is calculated and considerate before he answers a question. I think that's his way of saying it's not my, like, I can only do what's put in front of me. I think he, you know, do we want more deep shots? Yes. I think it's not necessarily as simple as just calling them, but we do need to call more. I don't think it's as simple as we call more, we complete. I don't think if you call four times more, you complete four times more, because I think right now we still have enough problems where if you call a deep pass, there's no guarantee that A, the receivers that we've got, if healthy, can create enough separation. And even if they do, that the O-line holds up well enough on the same play to complete that. But we do need to see more of it called. We just need more consistency in play calling. But I think, sorry, I know I'm rambling on, but I just think when it comes to it, I think Jason Taylor thinks he can make a change still. And I've got no problem with that. That's the leadership that made him a Dolphins great. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame, for that sort of leadership.
You mentioned, Lee, about watching the All-22. I mean, I don't have time to analyse that week in, week out, but for somebody who potentially does, and you mentioned the play calling, has Jalen Waddle actually ran a deep route at all this season? Has he run one single deep route that Tua could potentially have thrown to?
I'm not going to lie and say that I've watched enough of it. I struggle to watch All-22 because it's something that I'm new to and I'm trying to learn. So I don't want to say something that's not correct. Have I seen it? No. No, I'd not really. Maybe a couple of times I've seen him run, let's call it intermediate routes, that are kind of beyond, let's say, 15 yards, but not really any of those kind of like what you would call a true deep route. But that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It just means I haven't seen it. So I'm not going to pretend that I'm some sort of professional or know exactly what I'm looking at. That's not, you know, I'd be lying if I said I did.
We think you're a professional, mate. That's for sure. one quick point, then we'll move on to Sunday. The Gesicki, you mentioned the fumble. Or the botched snap, however you want to put it. It's really interesting to me that Mike Gesicki's kind of at the line of scrimmage, trying to sort something out, trying to make something happen, trying to explain the play call to other members of the offense. And then he did it again in the second half. And it just felt to me, that's what I want to see from a player. If a player's got to take control and do it, great, fine. But what the hell? Like, why did he have to do that? Why do we need him to do that? Like, what's going on there where he's lined up as the tight end? I mean, that's the kind of last person that you expect to be kind of taking charge and bossing around the rest of the offense. Like, what? Why are we in this position where that was even necessary, Lee? What do you reckon?
I'll be honest, I have no idea, but I completely agree with you in regards to if it needs fixing, I want him to try and fix it on the field. Like, yes, don't. Okay, it didn't work out in his favour because he ends up getting called on a illegal motion and then getting accidentally in the way of the snap. But to be honest, even at the time, I don't think Tua was ready for the snap anyway. I think that was probably on the centre more than on Gesicki or trying to get anything sorted. I mean, there's no way you should be having these troubles this late into the season. I mean, this late, we're halfway in the season. But you know what I mean? This deep in the season, we shouldn't be having these sort of problems. I did hear on a podcast, and I can't remember who it was. Might have been Joe Rose on a Locked On podcast, but I apologise if it isn't, saying that Tua needs to get the guys lined up correctly, and that's on the quarterback. Now, I don't understand. I've not played football, but part of me says he can only know they're lined up wrong when they line up. You can't know they're going to line up wrong before they line up. So you can only fix that once they're lined up. So I'm not really sure how you combat it before you break the huddle. That's, I mean, unless he's not conversing the play to them well enough, that could be a thing. We know we've had, quarterbacks in the NFL struggle with the language and kind of getting their point across, as I sometimes do here. But you know what I mean? It's that, I don't know what it boils down to. But yeah, if Mike sees something, fix it, man.
You're right, actually, because Tua alluded to it in his after-match presser in that it's a communication issue. So you're right. He doesn't know they're going to line up wrong until they actually line up wrong. And by then, if you've got a wide receiver who's over the other side of the field, 20, 30 yards away in a stadium away from home where the crowd's against you, to get them to shout to line up in the correct position is not necessarily going to be feasible. But it's I heard him say it was the tight end's job to communicate that because he's nearer. And I think that's what Gesicki was actually trying to do, is fulfill that role on behalf of the quarterback, if you like, to make sure that, and it might have even been Jalen Waddle who was lined up incorrectly, and for whatever reason, he couldn't communicate that properly. And we saw the botched play, but I thought it was interesting that Tua alluded to the fact that it's an ongoing communication process between the players down the line to make sure everybody's lined up correctly in that sort of hostile environment.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. And for me, what jumps off is if Gesicki's lined up on the other side of the offensive line, then even if it is his job, then Tua should be noticing that, and kind of he should be the one directing. You often see, like, and again, I hate kind of bringing Brady into this every week, but you often see Brady kind of, mouthing off at his offensive weapons or wherever, and putting them in position. Even people like Gronkowski, who's been playing with however many years. So, and that's not really a knock on Tua. It's just a kind of little thing there that, and when Gesicki's looking like an idiot walking over onto the Bills side of the line and having a rant mid-play, it's just very, just doesn't look very good, does it, for the coaching staff again, that this is where we've got to, the ill discipline that we've got to, sort of thing. But Lee,
No, I was just going to say, but this is also what you get in the first year of an NFL quarterback. And we're still in a first year's worth of games that he's actually played, like actual NFL experience. I mean, young quarterbacks make mistakes. I think you saw it all over the NFL on Sunday, especially, let's be honest, Justin Herbert struggled a little bit against the Patriots. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows like everyone wants to believe every week. He missed some throws, he made some bad decisions, and they got beat by a well-coached Bill Belichick team. But funnily enough, because we're playing badly, we want to say that Tua beating him in the start of the season counts for less. It's like, that's still a hard place to go, and they still did win that game, and the Patriots are now looking like a good team. Might be a stretch, I don't know. They're looking like a competent team, at least. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're certainly a team trending upwards.
How about Mike White, though? Where did that come from? That could have been our, I've forgotten his name now already. It was our third string. That Reed could have been us. Reed Sinnott, that could have been him. Anyway, we stuck with Jacoby Brissett.
Zach Wilson's been holding them back all this time.
Exactly. Bring on the Mike White kind of trading card boom. Because I seem to have found myself with a couple of when I thought he might take over at the Cowboys. But anyway, there you go. Bring on the boom. Let's quickly wrap up. Do we want to do game balls? Anyone got a game ball to give out? Go on. We've got to keep the tradition going. You're blowing your cheeks outside, but you can pick first.
Thanks for that. I was thinking about it earlier, actually, and this is the one game where I kind of struggled to pick out a game ball because only Parker really stood out on offense. On defense, it was more of a collective effort, I think, rather than any individual efforts. So it's very difficult to pinpoint a game ball, but I'm going to give it to Parker.
Yeah,
good return to the side.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Lee?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, but I was also going to say I'm pretty sure we just need to do a 53-man episode where basically we have Andy sit on here and basically tell us how bad each one of them is. Because every time you do this, the guy just comes out and plays. Like, you know, maybe Flo needs to hire you as a coach.
That's true, mate.
Get him going, man.
Motivational speaker.
If he does that, Andy can then give us jobs.
Exactly. Co-motivational speakers. Yeah. I'll take Byron Jones, because I thought Byron Jones made the play of the season for the Dolphins so far in the first quarter. That pass that was clearly going over his head. I think it was Diggs. It was in coverage on it. Diggs was going to go to the house, but got up above himself like one of the better basketball players in the league would, and just tipped it away. So I thought it was a fantastic, fantastic pass, defensed pass, the technical term of it. So,
yeah, technical term is he tipped it over the bar.
That's it, yeah. Very good goalkeeping is what we call that.
I did love in commentary when they said, oh, well, if you've got someone as good as Xavier Howard, you have to go at Byron Jones. It's like, you've clearly not watched any Dolphins games. Like, exactly, yeah. You read the box score clearly, but like, other than that, that's such a ridiculous statement.
Absolutely crazy, isn't it? Yeah, but no, what Byron Jones played well, and I thought that the Bills picked up a lot of yardage actually on Nick Needham in the slot. Not that Nick Needham had a bad game, he made some good plays, but they went after when they couldn't get to Diggs, when they couldn't get to Gabriel Davis and Emmanuel Sanders. It ended up being Cole Beasley at the slot, didn't it? So not a knock on Needham, because I say he made a couple of good plays, but that's the way they ended up finding the crack in our armour.
I think also we probably need an honourable mention for Duke Riley, because they weren't able to pick on a linebacker in coverage, and that's not just a dig at Jerome Baker, because Jerome seems to have been picked on this year, and I never thought he was that bad in coverage, but teams seem to gone after it and after it and after it, and the Dolphins don't have an answer for it, and neither does Jerome yet. So I thought he played really well, to be quite honest, in Jerome's place. That concerned me when I saw it, obviously, that he wasn't playing. Wasn't a surprise, but obviously you think, oh God, we're going against the Bills, and, you know, like you say, everyone expected a bloodbath. And I think if you take the flattering touchdown off, let's be honest, this is really a 19-11 game. And for some reason, again, Dolphins Twitter would have you believe that the world got worse last week after that loss compared to every other loss we've taken this year. And I would actually argue probably the best loss we've had.
Best loss. There we go.
We don't have a lot of good things to pick out right now. So.
Glass half full, definitely for Lee there. That's fine. Always good. Right, quick Texans run through. Could have been a bit of a travesty if it was going to be Watson and Tua kind of swapping places, something like that. As it is, it's going to be Tua versus probably Tyrod Taylor, who is definitely a better quarterback than Davis Mills. So that could be a slightly improved Texans team. But if we lose this game, I don't really know what to say. I mean, we probably won't lose this game, but we really, really shouldn't lose this game. They're not a good team. They've not got a lot of offensive talent apart from Brandon Cooks. Just got to win, haven't we, Si? Just got to win.
I do know what to say if we lose. If we lose, it'll be the worst loss. Lee said the Bills game was the best loss. Well, this will be the worst loss if we lose to the Texans. That's exactly how we should be looking at it, because the Texans are not a good team. And if we can't beat them at home, then we're not going to beat anybody. So that's what I would look to suggest if we did lose on Sunday.
I've just got a flashback to one of the games I went to Hard Rock Stadium in person for, which was when we lost to the Bills, the last game of the season. And Tyrod Taylor ran that excellent bootleg and just kind of, I don't know, went out the back end, and there's a wide open tight end in the end zone, and the Bills went to the playoffs, I think, didn't they, after that? And I was just like surrounded by Bills fans, and there was barely a Miami Dolphins fan in the stadium. It was just me and a lot of Bills fans, and I was like, I'm glad I've been to a game before, because if this was my first game, I would not be coming back as a Dolphins fan. But and that was Jay Cutler's last pass in the NFL as well, which was also nearly intercepted. So yeah, let's hope for a better weekend. Exactly, let's hope for a better Sunday. I don't think we need to dwell on it too much. We know we should be the better team. Like, coming into the season, you'd have looked at this and thought, this is basically a bit of a walk in the park, a bit of a break, almost like an in-season bye that you're still playing on. But here we are as a bit of a sort of momentum gatherer, isn't it? Really, if we get a win, we've got the Ravens the game afterwards, but you know, bit of feel good atmosphere. We can come on this podcast and have a positive conversation, and then we can move forward from it. So let's see where we go. Let's have some score predictions then. Lee, your score prediction first.
I am going to have 35-17.
That's ambitious.
I think I said that a couple of weeks ago for the Jacksonville game. I just think this is what that game should have been.
Fine, Si.
And before I give a score prediction, Andy, you've going to be able to, when you're much older, you can tell your grandkids that you were there for Jay Cutler's last ever pass in the NFL. What a claim to fame that is. Something you can share with your grandkids.
I can't remember who the quarterback that came in for him was, but he wasn't good. Oh, what's his name now? Come on, Lee, you'll know. It's like third string guy Adam Gaze liked. He took him to New York as well, and I forgot what he was called.
Oh, yeah.
And he was he wasn't very good. Oh, it's going to annoy me that. It's carry on, Si. I'll figure it out.
It wasn't Brandon Doughty, was it?
No.
No, it's
David Fells. David Fells. That was it.
That's the one, yeah.
He was garbage.
I'm going to go for a Dolphins win this week, and I'm going to go for 28-21.
Like that. I don't think it's going to be high scoring. I think it's going to be 21-10. It's just going to be a fairly run-of-the-mill game. One of those ones that if you're watching Red Zone, it comes to it like twice all afternoon. It's like, oh, these other games have been going on. We're just going to cut to this one quickly, and it's a two-yard run from Miles Gaskin for the touchdown, and we move on. So, yeah, one of them. But that'll do. We'll take a win. The resurgence
is coming. Win, doesn't matter how, just make sure you get a win. Like,
that's it. Indeed. This is the week that Duke Johnson comes good, lads. Didn't get elevated last week. My excitement.
Did he play for the Texans?
Yeah.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
Revenge match.
Yeah.
So here we go. That's it, right?
You mean you weren't looking forward to Watson, Fuller and Duke Johnson going against the Texans this week? Unbelievable.
Well, some people were. No comment on whether I was one of them. Anyway, let's wrap it up, lads. Anyone got anything they want to say before we get out of here? No, all good. Let's hope for a win next week then, and see you soon.